Hi, and welcome to the AdaptX podcast, the Adapt Learning community podcast hosted by Simon Day and Chuck Lawrence. In each episode, we'll dive into various topics related to Adapt. So in this episode, we're going to be discussing community plugins in Adapt, you know, what they are, what they mean, how you can discover them and install them into your authoring tool or framework. So, let's talk about what we mean by community plugins against the core plugins, which are the ones that come with Adapt. So Chuck, do you want to kind of give people a little introduction there?
Yeah, I think it is important for us to start with some sense of definition. So when we talk about plugins, even before the types of plugins, if we're thinking about some self-contained software that can be used readily with the framework, with the authoring tool, it just gives a lot of flexibility to the software, to the authoring tool. So we've got a variety of features that are in these plugins, and so we'll just call them plugins, even though we've got components and extensions and themes and menus. But those are the kinds of things that we're talking about, and in storyline, they tend to be called interactions, but we've got those, and one would expect that in an authoring tool. And with Adapt, we've got a number of them that are bundled with the framework. When you open up the framework, when you install the authoring tool in both places, there will be a set of these that are included. And we in the Adapt community tend to call these the core plugins. They are the ones that are created and maintained by the Adapt developers, and there is a commitment to continue to do so that they are reliable. They are fundamental to all the features and the workings of the framework and the authoring tool. So those we tend to refer to as the core plugins, but they stand alongside all these other plugins that people have put together. We refer to them as community plugins because they've been created by people in the wider Adapt community, or third-party plugins. So you may hear us going back and forth in our terminology, but third-party really emphasizing that they are not created by the Adapt core developers. They are not maintained by the Adapt core developers. So we have to rely on these third-party developers to maintain them. And we'll talk more about that too. But the fullest use of Adapt is expecting that you will go out and utilize some third-party plugins. So it's an important feature of Adapt.
Yeah, definitely.
Simon, what does a course author need to consider before taking the plunge and installing some of these third-party plugins?
Yeah, I think there's a few questions that you should ask yourself before you go ahead and start messing around with, starting to use these third-party plugins. Firstly, if you're a customer of some hosted versions of Adapt, like Learning Pools, Adapt Builder, you might not necessarily have access to the plugin browser. It's obviously you need to talk to your Adapt provider and make sure that you have this. Also, if you're not an admin on your authoring tool, you might not necessarily have access either. So you might have to talk to an administrator of your authoring tool, even if you're using the open source one, to make sure that they're happy to install plugins for you. You need to consider the quality of the plugin. You can go and find plugins, but there's no way to know that they're consistently going to be good. This is something we're going to talk about in a bit. How do you know that it's compatible with your framework version? How do you know that it does what it says it does and it doesn't have any bugs? And then the third point is that, you need to consider the risks of doing this. And if you're happy to make this jump yourself, or if you think it's better to just stay with the open source plugins because they are good, and that there's about 10 components and 10 extensions, and they do a lot of functionality already. So that there are really good third-party plugins available, which are well maintained, and they bring really good unique functionality to Adapt. It's just a matter of having the kind of faith in them to be good and their kind of ability to verify that they're going to do what they say they do. So Chuck, how would you suggest that people can kind of get to know that they can trust a plugin and trust the author, that they're capable of, well, and the plugin is capable of working with their authoring tool as intended?
There's ways I'm gonna test a plugin in my mind about the plugin. Do I trust the way it's created? And then part of it too is trying to figure out, do I trust the developer? And some ways they're different, and some ways they're similar. So for me, I'm going to be looking at the quality of the code. So I'm going to open up the browser, look at the different files that are in it. And, you know, I think that mostly I'm looking for flags and some of the negative things. Is the code convoluted? Is there lots of code that has been commented out, so it's not working right now, but it's not. There's no meaningful comments about what's happening. Is there a README that is still referencing the plugin that was used as its model? It's very common to take a plugin to copy the code and then make modifications to it. No problem with that. That's standard. But if the README or the package.json or the Bower is still referencing some of the former ones, then I'm not going to feel so confident that the developer was diligent and taking care of details. So I'm going to be looking for that. I'm not going to necessarily rule anything out based on any of these, but it's kind of the stuff that I weigh. I also weigh the repo. I'll go out there and I'll look at the issues. Are there people who have been reporting issues? That's fine. Everything's going to have a little bug. But how is the developer responding to them? Has he or she responded to them all? Was it in a timely manner? So I'll be looking at the dates in the repo. When were the last commits? Are there tagged releases? So I want to see evidence that it's current. If it is current, if there have been changes, then I'm going to be more confident that the developer is still active, still involved with the dApp, still maintaining the code. And that means to me that if I have an issue, then I'll probably get better response. Or if the framework is updated, then I have more confidence that the developer is going to update the plugin, which makes my life easier. So those are some things I'm going to look at that. But I'm not going to stop with that. I need to check out the framework versions. If I'm building a course in version 5, then some of these plugins that are out there, if they're older than 2 years, they might not work. An important thing about version 5, there was the theme really started using BEM. So there's a block element modifier naming convention. And so it's important to have.
It was a change in the HTML, and it obviously they restructured the whole HTML structure of plugins. So anything older wasn't compatible. So that was the major change, and I think that happened in January 2020 or maybe 2019. It was early 2019 or 2020, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. So I'm going to trust you on that. So I'm going to be looking to see if those kinds of framework versions and theme versions, if there's a compatibility issue. And then I think another obvious one too is looking to see if there is a properties schema. That properties.schema is so important for its use in the authoring tool. So if a plugin is important to me, if it's important for me to have my plugin working in the authoring tool, that's got to be there. And if it's not, then I have to consider making it, creating it myself. So those kind of things, how I would judge code. But along with that, I'm looking at the developer.
Sure.
I'm trying to gauge, are they participating in the dApp community? Do I know them from the forums? Do I know them from Gitter rooms? And I don't mean personally know them. But do I see their names? If I do, that's a plus. They probably have a little bit of a reputation from their kind of interaction. Again, I'm not ruling this out, but I want to know. I feel more confident if I have seen them around. So I'm looking at that. I'm looking at how professional the repo is, and then making a decision about that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think it is quite hard for someone who's newer to adapt, I guess, to understand from these things. But I think a few of the things we could take away that which are quite easy is the issues, which is a feature on GitHub, which allows you to see people can report bugs. So obviously, if there's a lot of issues and they haven't been fixed, that's a big red flag. The properties.schema file you were talking about is the way that the framework interacts with the authoring tool. So older plugins may not necessarily interact with the authoring tool, so that would be a big flag. And obviously the matter of, you know, readme files and stuff like that is very important as well. Yeah.
Yeah, good.
So yeah, I mean, let's imagine I found a plugin and I discovered that it's using version 4, for example, and I'm using version 5. What options, like, am I totally out of luck, or is there like any other options available, do you think, to make it work?
So I would, what I'd be doing is I'd first be looking over at the releases and seeing if there is a release for my version. Let's say I'm still on version 3. Then I would be looking to see if there's an earlier release that I can download and use for myself. But I'm not going to end there either. Like if we're going the other direction, if I'm using version 4, let's go the other direction. If I am using version 5 and it looks like it's only version 4 that that's been released, I'm going to look at the branches. It may be hiding in the branch. It may be that the developer has already begun coding another branch, updating in another branch, or just about to release. So I'm going to look for that. So maybe one other thing that we should consider is not just branches, but forks. What do you think about that, Simon?
Yeah. So a fork is a different version of, it's basically, imagine a fork is someone takes someone's software and then inherits it and then makes a change to it. So there might often in the adapt community, someone has built something and someone else likes what they do and they've added new features to it. I think drag and drop is something which has been forked countless times. I've seen lots of different forks of drag and drop components. So it allows you to kind of change it, add new functionality, maybe change the framework version, do stuff like that. So oftentimes when you're looking at a plugin on GitHub, you can see in the top right, there's this fork button. And if you don't click on fork, but you click on the number, it shows you all the other forks that have been done. So if you click on that and see that there's like 5 different forks, you can try clicking on the different forks to seeing if another developer has added new features that may be better than the version which is already out there, or again, like supports a different framework version or does something else differently. So if you notice something which isn't working for your framework version, for example, try a branch, which is a different version that they've made of their repository, or try a fork, which is a different version that someone else has made of that repository. So those are two concepts that are quite built into GitHub. That if you're completely new to, obviously a lot of adapt users aren't technical, and these are new concepts, so we're trying to make this as easy to understand as possible. And you don't have to be a technical whiz to use adapt, I guess.
Good tip. Yeah, I think that's important, because I think that so often when we're looking for different plugins, we might be just trying to distinguish them by name. And I think that your tip about looking at different forks is just a heads up that there may be plugins out there with the same names that are very similar, but they may have some key difference. So look around, even if you've got one with the name that you need.
Yeah, this is kind of a weird analogy, but like finding plugins is like obviously searching for gold or searching for diamonds, something along those lines, where like, because it's a Wild West, again, another kind of weird phrase, but, you know, anyone can do anything they want to. So the way you're finding stuff and discovering stuff isn't as simple as you may necessarily think it is, but there are tools to find the right things out there.
Good. So maybe we move into that. Simon, what do you think is the best way for someone to discover plugins?
Yeah, I think there's about three ways that I would, well, three broad approaches to use. Using the plugin browser, which is the kind of recommended way, searching on GitHub, and alternatively using a kind of curated list of plugins which someone has provided for you. So the plugin browser is obviously it's a page on the Adapt Learning website. If you're using the authoring tool, if you go into the plugin management page, then it should be a hyperlink on the left-hand side. It's very good because it's very basic. You have a search bar at the top. You can search in a phrase like, you know, search or drag and drop or something like that, and all the plugins that have that name will appear. Then you just obviously click on the plugin and then go to the GitHub page and then download it and add it straight to your authoring tool or framework. The other approach would be searching on GitHub. So this is basically the approach where you type adapt, then dash, and then whatever thing you need, like search or whatever. Like, you may not necessarily know it, so obviously there's some trial and error, but the standard that adapt uses, the convention that adapt uses, is to always name plugins adapt dash something. So if you just search in GitHub, then there's a good chance you find it. The reason why you do this rather than searching in the plugin browser is that some plugin developers forget to register their plugin. Or again, like, because of the different versions or forks or branches, like, it is important that you have an understanding of how GitHub works and you're familiar with the platform to really get the best use of Adapt, I believe. Well, of the plugins of Adapt. And then finally, if you have someone who can provide you with a curated list of plugins, and they've done all the grunt work for you of discovering the plugin and testing it and confirming what it does and which version or which branch or which fork you should be downloading, then that's obviously really good because they've done a lot of the hard work for you. Those are the three ways I think I'd kind of summarize.
So we've got a special announcement in this podcast, our very own curated list of plugins. Simon, do you want to give more information about it?
Yeah, as I just said, I think one of the best ways to discover plugins is having a curated list. And, you know, it's part of our Adapt Tips philosophy, what we're trying to do with Adapt Tips. We want to help more people out. And we thought this is a really good way to help the Adapt community. We've been using Adapt for over a dozen years between us, I think. So we have a good understanding of the best plugins, the ones that have been prevalent in the community during that time, and the ones we use every day for our own projects. If you go on the Adapt Tips website, you can download this resource. You need to create an account to do so, but it's totally free to do. It's an Excel spreadsheet which has our list of plugins and more information about what they do. We're going to add screenshots. We're going to add stuff like that to make it as easy as possible to use. And we're going to maintain this and kind of keep it running. Whenever new plugins come out, we're going to be updating it. And whenever we discover new things, we're going to be adding it as well. So that's our announcement. Of course, like, you know, this is a curated list, but we're going to keep it fairly small. So it's still worth knowing how to discover plugins other ways, so that you can obviously, if there's something in particular a client wants, then you can kind of know exactly what to search for and find it yourself. But we're really hoping that the best plugins out there are going to be part of this list, and people are going to be able to freely, well, easily download them and easily use them in the way. So that concludes today's podcast. Obviously, we hope you enjoy it, and please download this free resource, and we hope you get good use of it. We're going to be, our next episode, we're going to be talking to a special guest, and it should be a really interesting topic that we've both been looking forward to for some time. Yeah, thanks again. Tune in next time. Bye.